Welcome to Open Minds, the weekly sermon podcast from Christ Church Anglican Cathedral in Vancouver, Canada. Reflections provoking thought at the intersection of faith and culture.
Thank you so much for welcoming Charles and me into your circle, right in front of the beautiful table. I'll tell you just enough of my biography to give a little bit of context to the words. My parents arranged for me to have a very heavy-duty upbringing in traditional Judaism, and I actually loved most of it. I worked for 15 years as a professor of philosophy in North Carolina. I moved with Charles and our children to Vancouver in 2005. I worked as the rabbi of Or Shalom Synagogue for 10 years. And in 2014, I began to work at the Vancouver School of Theology as director of interreligious studies and professor of Jewish studies. And through that work at VST, I made many connections within Vancouver's Anglican community, and here I am. Thank you again. As I see my life, I was born into the lush green pastures of the 23rd Psalm. When I was a child, growing up in New York City, there was always food in the refrigerator. Every day, when my brother and I came home from school, we could count on finding celery, carrots, slices of pasteurized processed cheese, milk, and diet soda. And if we really wanted a treat, we would mix the soda in with the milk, and it was like a milkshake. Over time, our mother became an animal advocate, and the cheese disappeared. And Mom made us read the book, Diet for a Small Planet, and she made us try a more plant-based menu. She taught us to think about food security as a global issue. And she insisted, wealthy nations, like those of us living in the United States, had to cut down on our eating of luxury foods. When I was 30 years old, I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina. And some call that the buckle of the Bible Belt. Our neighborhood was built on Billy Graham's old family farm. And you can say many critical things about the U.S. Bible Belt. Racism, homophobia, greed masquerading as piety. Some folks there seem to work hard to keep all that alive. But the U.S. Bible Belt also has many beautiful things in it. For example, most people in our city believed that God wants us to care for people who have less than we do. So every church, synagogue, temple, and mosque that was bigger than a button participated in the Room at the Inn program. Once a month, spiritual communities with large buildings and much wealth would become temporary homeless shelters. Smaller communities that met in living rooms or basements would send volunteers. On cold nights, police would approach people sleeping outdoors and offer them rides to heated shelters. Not everyone would accept. Some people felt safer right where they were. Nonetheless, the offer was regularly extended. Supermarkets would give their surplus food to the many soup kitchens. Educators, healthcare professionals, religious leaders would partner with members of the city's most vulnerable groups to lobby state legislators for better protection. There were many beautiful things going on in the region. So, in that way, I learned to be a Bible Belter as well. And when I got a sabbatical semester from the university, the only one I got in those 15 years, I volunteered at the local food bank. It was run by an ecumenical network of churches, and it was called, you could probably guess, Loaves and Fishes. I did also research and write an article, like I was supposed to, and I think it was called Engaging with Student Developmental Issues Using the Existentialist Philosophies of Martin Heidegger and Walker Percy, or something like that. You can see why the hands-on work was calling. At the food bank, I learned about everyday realities that are familiar to many people but were new to me. Some of my coworkers, my fellow volunteers, were former food bank clients. Most of our current clients were families trying to make ends meet, and we couldn't always help them. Some had no address, no cooking or food storage facilities, or no access to transportation. Others needed more food than our funders would allow us to give out. So I began to understand food security as a local issue. We had enough food in the city, but because of housing policies and access, because of transportation infrastructure, because of funding conventions and practices, we couldn't get enough food to the people who needed it. I learned so many things on that sabbatical. Things that I could have turned away from forever had I stayed in the library and only worked on my article. Not long after the sabbatical, my father, who understood urban realities far better than I did, he died of cancer, and I found comfort in the 23rd Psalm. For a month, I read it 5 times a day. I read it on the grassy banks of the local creek, and the psalm seemed to say, "Let the beauty of nature calm your heart." I read it on a dry, rocky mountainside, and the psalm seemed to say, "Water once ran here, and it will run here again." I read the psalm in the supermarket parking lot, and it seemed to say, "You are not alone. The people around you will feed you as they feed each other, because they live in the house of the Lord." And thus, the psalm became for me a spiritual reminder to work toward food security. And when I looked closely at the Hebrew, I realized that is actually part of the plain meaning of the 23rd Psalm. Of course, in biblical Hebrew, there is no such thing as plain meaning. Biblical Hebrew has only about 6,000 word roots, and that is far from enough to say everything that people need and want to say. So many Hebrew words have more than one meaning, and thus most words are metaphors. And some biblical Hebrew words are associated with specific biblical stories, and in those cases, a single word evokes an entire story. And when I look at the metaphors and the stories, I see teachings about food security. Not just in the obvious metaphor of a set table, but threaded throughout the psalm. I'll reference the well-known King James and NRSV translations as I speak. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." In Hebrew, "Adonai ro'i lo echsar." Adonai, Lord, is actually the polite stand-in for God's unpronounceable name, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, YHWH. It means infinite being, infinite possibility. And if you try to pronounce it, it sounds like a breath. Ro'i, my shepherd. Our biblical ancestors, Abraham, Sarah, Hagar, Isaac, Rebekah, Jacob, Rachel, Leah, Bilhah, Zilpah, they were all shepherds. They took care of sheep. Moses was the good shepherd of the Israelites. He took care of people. God was the master shepherd who supervised Moses. In the biblical universe, everyone is part of a great network of shepherds. I shall not want, lo echsar. Literally, I shall not lack. Nothing will be missing from my life. In other words, says the psalm, I take my place in the great network of shepherds, caring and being cared for. When we do this work, so much is possible. Even a world where everyone has what they need. God makes me lie down in green pastures. Bin'ot desha yarbitseni. Ne'ot means beauty. Desha are new shoots of grass, the kind that popped out of the ground on the third day of creation. Yarbitseni literally means makes me lie down and graze even as I carry a heavy burden. So much in one word, but that's how biblical Hebrew is. God leads me beside the still waters. Al mei minuchot yenahaleni. No translator knows what mei minuchot actually means. There are no other still waters in the Hebrew Bible. But mincha, sounds like minuchot, mincha, is a gift or an offering. Yenahaleni means leads me to a watering place. The psalmist says, God has made clean water and fresh food available as a free offering to us. And we need to find it even amid the heavy burdens and the obstacles that people sometimes put up. And when we do this work, it's as if we renew the work of creation. God restores my soul. Nafshi yishovev. This actually means my living body splinters and breaks apart. Hold on to that. God leads me in the paths of righteousness for the sake of God's name. Yancheni b'magle tzedek lema'an shemo. Yancheni, God graces me. B'magle tzedek, with circles of justice. Lema'an shemo, for the sake of God's reputation. One more phrase. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me. Ach tov v'chesed yirdefuni. Literally translated, beauty and love will chase after me. They will run toward me. Put the words together. When my body splinters and begins to break apart, fellow shepherds concerned with justice run to encircle me. They do it because they love God, the lead shepherd, and they want others to feel that love as well. Of course, our favorite English translations of the 23rd Psalm are also accurate. The psalm is still an affirmation of God's spiritual presence, and it's still an expression of the lush inner rewards of opening our own spirits to greater feeling, greater awareness, greater possibilities. but it's also, at the same time, a manifesto for how we will live into those possibilities. If we are alive, it is by the grace of, and sometimes at the expense of, our fellow shepherds. The 23rd Psalm calls us to give back to others in the shepherd network. The psalmist says, "I take my place in the great network of shepherds, caring and being cared for. I dream of what is possible, a world where everyone has what they need, clean water and fresh food. When injustice blocks them, when their safety is threatened, I will run to encircle them with love." In Charlotte, North Carolina, people of faith lived by this manifesto. They tried to understand the burdens as well as the obstacles. They tried to understand the immediate needs and the larger structural problems and barriers. And they tried to work together across faith traditions, across social classes, across racial and ethnic divisions on every level. And from them, I learned, if you truly believe that God is your shepherd, then you too will become a shepherd. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Open Minds podcast. For more information on the Cathedral, its ministries, and how you can get involved, go to www.thecathedral.ca.